Dave, you ready since it's your birthday today? We have to. Oh, I'm sorry. I had to throw that out there again. All right. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting for a regularly scheduled commission meeting. It is Thursday, 10 a.m., November 20th. We usually meet on Wednesdays. Today, we're meeting a day later. Thursday, I just got back from Nehruk as well as we wanted to have our commission meeting on November 20th to celebrate Dave Thompson's birthday. So, didn't pass that along till today. You know, I have a couple of comments about my Nehruk trip, but I'll probably hold those to the end, so I don't have any other opening remarks. Commissioner Christman?
I don't have opening remarks other than to thank you for representing us at Nehruk. That's a big sacrifice when there's deer hunting that could be done in the evening. So
I
appreciate you doing that.
All right. Thanks, Randy. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I don't have any other comments either.
All right. Super. We have a few items on consent. I'd move passage of the items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. All righty. I have two motions today. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order in Public Service Commission Tom's Backhoe Service, Inc. Damage Prevention Complaint, case number GS13-712. Thank you, Julie. On July of 2013, MDU filed a complaint with the PSC alleging a third-party damage complaint violation by Tom's Backhoe, Tom's Backhoe. The violation would have been of North Dakota Century Code one-call notice. On August 16th, the commission staff sent Tom's Backhoe a copy of the complaint and requested a response. On September 6th, Thompson, on behalf of Tom's Backhoe, filed a response. Basically, the gist of this one is that the complaint was that Tom's Backhoe violated North Dakota Century Code, and our staff went through and recommended a $500 fine be imposed to Tom's Backhoe. The commission found that it did indeed reach a prima facie case. We set up a hearing for March 12th of 2014, issued the notice, and Tom's Backhoe requested a hearing. It was, I think, the first time we'd actually had a hearing on this, and Tom's Backhoe, in my opinion, did a very good job of representing their case. The facts were pretty clear for most of it that they did, in fact, call in for a locate. The locate was done. Tom's Backhoe did actually, they damaged some of MDU's facilities. But the alleged violation was that Tom's Backhoe did not execute the appropriate care required during excavation. And that really kind of was the gist of the discussion in the hearing. And Tom's Backhoe, in my mind, they did a very good job of explaining that, yes, in fact, they did hit the facilities. They did reimburse the damages, but he did not agree at all that he did not use the appropriate care required. And so, quite honestly, we had a work session on this. We had a lot of discussion with our staff in North Dakota One Call about this. And what it really came down to, I guess, in my mind, is that He admitted that he hit the facility. He paid for the damages, but he did not say that he wasn't doing appropriate care. He had done borings, and what it looked like, from my viewpoint, is that the underground facility had different depths. At one point, it's 2 feet. The next point, it's a few inches. The next point, it's a few more feet. So what I think we've done here is a good idea. Commission concludes that Tom's Backhoe was doing an excavation. They did damage the one-inch gas pipeline. But the totality of the circumstances, the commission cannot conclude that Tom's Backhoe did not act in a careful and prudent manner when conducting the excavation. So I think this, in my mind, is a very good reinforcement of the commission process that we went through. The facts were that he hit the infrastructure, but he came in and gave his piece about why he thought he had done the right thing. And so, therefore, I don't think it's kind of like in the NFL when you can't overturn a decision. I thought that couldn't prove that he didn't do it carefully. And so he did pay for the damages, and I think to me, in my mind, that was a big thing. If he wouldn't have paid for the damages, maybe we'd have gone a little bit different way. But he did admit he hit it, but he certainly wasn't going to say he wasn't being careful. And there was some extenuating circumstances around it. So I think this is a very good order, and it shows that we listen to both sides. These aren't always someone files a complaint, and they end up getting fined by the PSC.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, I just want to elaborate on that last point. I think there's a lot of times when it comes to government regulations that people feel intimidated, and oftentimes these things maybe don't quite rise to the level of where people feel that that they're justified in getting an attorney to help them, and so they might feel compelled to just cave. And there are times, certainly, when legal representation is merited. Mr. Thompson didn't feel so. He came in. He represented himself. He took time out of his day to come in. But the fact is, this is a case that shows that just because the PSC brings a case about, people do have a chance to come up here and present their side of it and get a fair hearing. And I think that's the case in this particular case. I feel really good about this one. Not about the fact that it got caught. I mean, that's a sad thing, but I feel good about the result here.
The only other additional point I would add, because I share both of your feelings on that as well, and the balance. There's two sides to every story, and in this case, I think this case also emphasizes the responsibility. It's a shared responsibility. You have to have the careful operators doing the excavation notices and exercising care when they dig, and you also have to have the utilities properly maintaining their infrastructure and keeping it, you know, depth of cover and reasonable and that sort of thing. And it is a shared responsibility out there keeping this infrastructure safe. And I think this order, in some degree, also recognizes that.
I could just, I guess, reinforce the process a little bit. The process is the staff makes a recommendation, and so that's where I think a lot of times the public hears the PSC is, you know, saying this is the fine. Well, it's the PSC's staff that's making that recommendation, then we actually then go through the hearing process. So the next order, you'll see that the staff made a recommendation that resulted in a consent order. But that's the big thing, I think, to always get the public to try to understand the process. The staff will make a recommendation, and then we can either accept that recommendation or change it. In this case, you know, the recommendation was a $500 fine. We basically, you know, rejected that and went with what we thought was appropriate, that we couldn't prove that one way or the other. So it's a process.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Thank Julie Prescott, too. Where's she at? Julie, I know you did a lot of work on this. This was, as it seems to be, the groundbreaking and PSC damage prevention. So I know you and Alana did a lot of work in Pat, so thank you for this. Because this becomes, you know, one more of a backdrop of precedents that we've done in this particular set of facts that we probably will use again down the road. Okay, item BK2. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's damage prevention enforcement action concerning TNA Turf and Irrigation, LLC, case number PU14-703.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Okay, TNA Turf Irrigation, LLC is a Nebraska corporation with offices located in Elmwood, Nebraska. On August 22nd of this year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Verendry Electric, alleging that TNA Turf did not follow the appropriate portion of North Dakota One Call. Verendry Electric, of course, is a corporation or a company, a co-op up in the Minot Velva area. A little background. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that on August 20th, TNA Turf personnel began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code while performing the installation of an irrigation system at the Minot Country Club in Minot, North Dakota. Also based on the investigation, staff concluded that a 500 MCM three-phase feeder line, which is a very, very big feeder line, was damaged during the excavation, and the amount of the damage was approximately $3,064. The operator has been reimbursed for the damages, so that's good news. As a result of the damage, however, there was over 500 residential customers were affected, 100 businesses, and one clinic lost services for 1 hour. So it was a very big outage. And, you know, kudos to Verendry Electric for getting the services back up pretty quick. But, you know, you're dealing with a lot of businesses, a lot of homes, and quite honestly, one medical facility. So I think when you see what staff recommended, that was all tied into the large staff recommendation. Staff also concluded there was no agreement between TA Turf and Verendry under North Dakota Century Code. And the excavation was not made in time of emergency, and the staff concluded that TNA violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation notice to North Dakota One Call at least 48 hours before excavation. What we have here is during the process, staff made the recommendation to us, and they also talked to TNA about a consent decree and said that if TNA Turf would pay $12,000 in a consent decree, that's what the staff recommended would make this appropriate. So Quite honestly, TNA Turf came back. They agreed with that. They've agreed to pay the $12,000. That would be the largest fine ever levied by the North Dakota Public Service Commission in this type of proceedings. And what I would say on this one is it's a consent decree, meaning that, you know, we did not have a hearing on this, but basically I think what ended up happening is the company, they did it, and they admitted to it. The severity of the infrastructure that they hit was such that they looked at the facts of this case, and they said, you know what, we did it. We're taking responsibility. We're going to pay the fine, and we're going to move through it. So kudos to Victor, I guess, for putting this all together. I think the big thing on all this is that the awareness, I think, is continuing to get out there. We've got some proceedings coming in front of us that even have larger amounts out there. So I think that now companies are really starting to look long and hard at the totality of the facts when the staff presents them with an opportunity to get some certainty in what things might be. It looks like in this case particularly they took it. They had paid for the damages. And so hopefully we can move forward from this. But this is significant. I know that Bruce from Verendry has talked to us a lot about his infrastructure getting damaged in the Minot area. And this will, of course, close out this case, but also send even a larger signal to the companies out there digging that they make sure they do it correctly. And I think that it's fair because the number of residences damaged, interrupted, the number of businesses in the medical facility really equal to this large fine.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I can't support this consent agreement, even though the company consented to it. This is one of those where I expect, you know, I don't know if they feel intimidated by the process or if it's a distance thing. It's an out-of-state company, you know, probably a lot of travel involved with coming here to work on it further. But especially in the case of a first-time offender like this, I get that we kind of are in the process of building up a kind of a penalty system that recognizes the severity of damage where, you know, there's multiple consumers impacted, especially if it's businesses and then especially yet if it's clinics or hospitals or nursing homes. But in the case of a first-time offender and the fact that when it comes to these multiple businesses, I think we need to remember, especially in the telecommunications world, I'm more familiar with that than the electric world. But in telecommunications, at least some rural telcos, the rural residences are considered business lines. And so I'm not sure if that's the case here, but it's possible that it is. It, you know, could also be some businesses where, you know, it's someone's lawnmower business in the evenings where they fix some small engines or something. I don't know that these are all necessarily Walmarts and Menards stores either. And it just seems to me that the difference, you know, someone does something wrong, and in this case they did. They had a locate done. And a lot of time. I mean, we're not talking a few days or even a few weeks. I can't remember the exact time, you know, but a lot of time passed, enough that Verendry put their line in. And then they came back and were still counting on their old one call and cut this. So clearly a mistake was made. They're acknowledging that. But to use severity to take this what otherwise I think would probably be like a $1,000 fine all the way up to $12,000 is just excessive. And I don't know if there's other support. To me, this ought to be, you know, maybe I guess the number I came to in my mind trying to figure it out was $5,500, but somewhere in that range, this ought to be a fine somewhere around half this large, I think, because of severity. But I just think this is going too far, especially in the case of a first-time offender.
Is there further discussion?
So, I would make a motion to that effect if I thought there was potential support for it here.
Well, I guess in terms of process, can we do a motion like that?
This is a consent decree. We either accept it or reject it.
What's the process for rejecting it? Then you go back and renegotiate with them, or do they end up not.
I would think if it's lowering it, that it would just be a matter of.
If we reject this consent decree, the victor would then go back and offer something different. But I would encourage us to accept this consent decree. The $12,000, the damages caused in the loss of services was much, much more than that.
I agree, but I have to say when I saw the $12,000, I thought it was a typo at first because it seemed like a lot for a first-time offense. Now, the fact that the company agreed to it and the severity lends me to think I'll accept it because they agreed to it. But I am concerned about the precedent that it sets for first-time penalties on an issue like this. So I guess for those two reasons, the fact that the company agreed to it and the severity, I'm going to go along with it. But I would caution staff to you know, be reasonable on these first-time offenses and you know, make sure that we aren't coming down too hard. The other thing that it does do, though, and I think this is important, is it does send a strong message to the excavators out there that they need to, A, know our laws before they come to our state and start operating, and they need to follow them in exercise care. I'm concerned not only with the severity of the dam, the number of houses that were and businesses and the medical center that was without power as a result of this, but the workers themselves, the people operating the equipment, this is seriously dangerous for them, and it's just not acceptable. They have to do a better job of calling and getting the underground infrastructure located and being careful about their digs. Someone is going to end up dead as a result, and it'll be the worker on the machine who takes the, you know, the ultimate, pays the ultimate price. So I'm going to go along with this consent decree today and see how things evolve in the future.
If I could just add a little context to Commissioner Crispin's comment about first time. In 2011, we had an individual killed because they didn't follow North Dakota one-call law. And at that time, the max fine was $5,000. And just because it's a first-time offense doesn't mean that's a lone factor. If it's a company's first time an individual is killed, it's a whole different set of circumstances. In this case, the clinic, I mean, we don't know what happened in that 1 hour of lost services during the clinic. You know, so that's the part to me. This is what makes it a whole different set of standards. And so the first time, I think, is appropriate to consider as one of the factors. But we've had cases where individuals have been killed in North Dakota because somebody didn't follow North Dakota one-call law, which I think in my mind changed the variables of the max fine going from $5,000 to $25,000. So it is certainly one factor in there, but it's not the largest factor. To me, the largest factor is risk and what could potentially happen.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, I'll proceed with the roll call vote. Commissioner Kalk?
Aye.
Commissioner Crispin?
Nay.
Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Aye.
Motion is approved.
The Commissioner Crispin, are you going to be putting a dissent in this one? The only reason I ask is we have X amount of days to do that. We want to get that in the notes. I don't think you have to decide today. I just want to make sure we... Okay, yeah, that's why I asked. I knew there was something on that.
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you, Randy. All right, that concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Crispin.
Okay, RC1. I move the commission approve bond release number 3 for surface coal mining permit number NACT-8503 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to release all reclamation liabilities on 11.182 acres of industrial land located in the southeast quarter of Section 24, Township 145 North, Range 88 West, in Mercer County. No monetary bond reduction was requested, and the release will become effective December 22, 2014, unless a formal hearing is requested.
Second.
This property was initially affected by American Natural Gas during construction of the DGC gas plant, and a portion of the area was used as an inert waste disposal site, which was authorized by the North Dakota Department of Health. This property was subsequently permitted by Coteau, and the inert waste disposal site was capped with subsoil and topsoil and closed in January of 1989, so 25 years ago. The eastern portion of the tract was reaffected by Coteau for use as a wood storage site from 2006 through 2013. In the spring of 2013, DGC and Coteau together requested the wood storage area and portions of the remainder of the tract be converted to a parking lot to accommodate DGC contractors during plant maintenance and construction events. DGC was granted a special use permit by the North Dakota Health Department to modify the existing inert waste site for use as a parking lot. Approval to construct the parking lot was granted May 17th of 2013. The formal final bond release inspection was conducted on June 25th of this year. The North Dakota State Health Department, OSM, county commissioners, and surface owners were invited to participate in the inspection. Jessica Unruh and Troy Langang from the Coteau Properties Company and Mike Dietz and Jacob Dow representing DGC participated in the final bond release inspection. No concerns were identified during this inspection that would prevent final bond release approval. Canada thistle and wormwood were identified growing on the property during the bond release inspection, and these noxious weeds were subsequently controlled with the herbicide application. A notice of the bond release application was published in the official county newspapers, the Hazen Star and Beulah Beacon, weekly from June 5th through June 26th of 2014. No objections to the bond release application were received. If approved, Coteau Properties will be released from all reclamation liabilities on this 11.182 acres of land, and assuming this bond release is approved today, it will become effective on December 22nd, 2014, unless a formal hearing is requested.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-733, canceling warehouse license number 247, issued to Southam Elevator Company at Southam, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Southam is discontinued effective October 30th, 2014.
Second.
As of September 30th of this year, no replacement bond had been filed with the commission and suspension notices were mailed to Southam. On October 6th, the grain warehouse inspector was there, and the inspector verified the suspension notices were posted, and the inspector reviewed the company records and verified that all the grain on hand was company-owned except for just under 1,350 bushels of barley that was on warehouse receipts issued to one farmer. On October 6th, Southam submitted a request to remove the grain from the warehouse to satisfy the warehouse receipts. On October 8th, this commission adopted an order suspending Southam's warehouse license effective October 1st, and we also adopted an order authorizing Southam to operate the warehouse just to redeliver grain that was previously received. On October 22nd, the farmer with the warehouse receipts contacted our staff and verified that all barley was redelivered to him. On October 29th, Southam filed a request to discontinue business completely. All the storage obligations are satisfied, and staff recommends the commission approve this request to discontinue business effective October 30th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And lastly, RC3, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-815, canceling warehouse license number 1233, issued to Farmers Union Oil Company of Valva at Drake, North Dakota, and ordering the business at Drake is discontinued effective immediately.
Second.
It's always kind of confusing because this is Farmers Union of Valva, but their facilities aren't at Valva, so just keep that in mind. Our licensing division received a request to discontinue business from Farmers Union Oil of Valva for its facility at Drake. For the record, they also operate another grain warehouse at Martin, North Dakota. All the grain was removed from the Drake facility. There are no outstanding storage obligations. This facility has been sold to a private individual. However, it is being leased to Lone Prairie Grain, who have indicated they plan to license it in the future. But as far as the license to Farmers Union of Velva, they request that it be discontinued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
I have three items, and the first item has been withdrawn. We're still waiting some additional information for the company. We had added it to our agenda early just in hopes of being able to wrap this up, but we didn't receive the information from the company, so we'll wait until the next meeting.
Do you want to schedule, put on scheduling to do a work session on that? Just when we get the information?
Sure. Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay.
Okay, so JF2, I move the commission grant the October 29th, 2014 petition for reconsideration of findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, and further move the commission adopt the amended filings, findings of fact, conclusion of law and order, issuing first amended certificate of corridor compatibility number 157 and first amended route permit number 169 in Highland Crude LLC, Crude Oil Pipeline, McKinsey-Williams, Montreal, citing application case number PU-13-136.
Second.
This is an application for a 197-mile system that has been a gathering system and has been applied to convert to a transmission system. We originally provided an order on October 8th on this case, basically requesting or requiring that the company go back and get the waivers from the residents who they hadn't received them from or move the line. We gave them the order and the certificate, but they we required them to get those waivers from the residences impacted or move the line in those areas. This line is already in the ground. The company's come back basically saying this pipeline was constructed in six different segments. They'd like to operate these segments that are not along the areas where the they still need waivers, and so that's their request, is for us to adjust the order and allow them to operate just those segments that aren't impacting the areas where they don't have the waivers. And so we've reviewed their request. I've kind of drawn out the little map here, and so I'm going to hold it up for the audience. The six segments are these here, one, two, three, four, five, and six. The residences where the waivers are still outstanding are in these areas here. The adjusted order would approve them operating this segment, this portion of this. This is the longer segment, but there's an injection station right here where oil is injected, and they propose to operate just this segment as a transmission and this segment as a transmission system. We've looked at the application and the order. I think that this revised order still maintains the good landowner relationships. It assures that the landowner's wishes are preserved in those areas. The line would not be allowed to operate as a transmission system. The company still has to get those waivers if they want to go back and operate in those areas as a transmission system. But they feel that they can operate just the segments that there are no objections from landowners on as transmission, and they can begin doing that as soon as possible. I think that this order does two things. It recognizes the wishes of the landowners, maintains that those are preserved, while also allowing the company to maximize this infrastructure that already exists and put it to good use. And so I support the motion and the order in front of us today, the amended order in front of us today.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just add that I think this is a good order as well, that when we did the actual hearing, it was interesting that, you know, they had a lot of different segments that we went through in the hearing, and one of the thoughts I had during the hearing was, you know, I wonder why they didn't break this into smaller bites of the apple as they went through the hearing, but I think they wanted to try to get as many things as they could move through at once. And when it got into the hearing process, it was clear that the commission had more concerns over a certain segment. So the way this breaks it out, I think, is a very good decision. And it also, I think, it sends a message to the companies, too, that when you do your filings, it's up to you to decide whether you want to include, you know, you decide the area you want to include. So I think it works out really well today.
I do want to just, if I could, mention one more thing that I failed to mention in the revised order, but it does include a stipulation that that Highland must ensure that no construction, operation, or other activities related to a transmission facility are undertaken on the segments that I outlined here that are not going to be designated as transmission segments. And it requires that Highland maintain sufficient records and other information to establish these segments are not being operated as transmission facilities prior to satisfying the conditions that we've already outlined. And it outlines that the commission retains all of its investigative enforcement and other powers granted to it under the law to ensure that Highland is complying with these conditions. So we included that right in the order to emphasize that we're going to be making sure that they aren't somehow accidentally or intentionally operating the other segments where they don't have the waivers as transmission facilities until they receive the waivers.
Is there any further discussion?
Well, that last part was what I was going to point out, and now it's been pointed out. But I do think it's really important because, you know, there are some landowners, they're not actually the landowners where the pipeline is. It's the neighbors that live very close by that have certainly expressed some skepticism. And I think emphasizing the fact that we need good record keeping and everything so that those people can be assured that there's not some kind of backdoor around the siting requirements being done is really important here, and so I think it's certainly a win-win and a pretty well-written order.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. My second motion, I move the commission suspend the tariff filing and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utility Company's electric generation rider rates, case number PU-14-109.
Second.
On February 27th of last year, MDU filed to implement a generation resource cost recovery rider tariff under the North Dakota Century Code 49-0505. To recover costs associated with the 88-megawatt turbine generator known as Heskett 3 outside of Mandan. On August 20th, the commission approved a settlement agreement, and that basically delayed the cost recovery of the new generation, the new generator until MDU's earnings became insufficient to cover the additional revenue requirement. On November 14th, MDU filed a request to implement the rate adjustments necessary to recover the additional cost of Heskett 3 to be effective January 1st of 2015. Basically, the rates they're requesting would result in a $2.53 per month increase for the average retail customer, residential customer. Offers an opportunity for a hearing and requires that comments and requests for a hearing must be received by December 24th of 2014. Also, later in our meeting, we'll set up a time for an informal hearing on this discussion. And I thought that was appropriate. Moving forward, we'll do a formal hearing if we're requested. One is requested, but we did just have a formal hearing on this summer and went through everything in real detail. Basically, just as a reminder, they applied for this generation rider last spring. It would have been effective August 1st if it had been approved. The settlement agreement allowed MDU to come back and ask for the rider, but basically they said we don't need it right now. We think we can cover the costs in 2014 with the existing revenues. It also required that they share if they earned more than their allowable return on equity, which is 10.75%. In 2014, they would have had to share some of that, 50% of that with their customers. They've, in their application for this, they have said they did not over-earn. They earned like a 10.24%. We'll evaluate in that in this proceeding as well and see if our staff agrees with their numbers and that they indeed haven't earned any that they need to share with the customers. And then we will also evaluate their request for a $2.53 per month average customer rate increase for 2015. They, in their settlement agreement, agreed not to have a generation rider this in 2014 in exchange for having some sort of a expedited process for requesting one. That's why we're doing the 30-day notice for an opportunity for a hearing, and we'll have a hearing if we're requested to, but if not, we will quite possibly do the informal and make a decision based on that. Let's see. Oh, also established in the settlement agreement was the cost. It's another key piece. The cost to be recovered was agreed upon, so we don't need to evaluate that now in this proceeding. It was established and agreed to in the settlement agreement that the costs are $5.2 million, so that's what MDU will be seeking to recover through the rate increase moving forward.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. I had a couple closing thoughts, reaction to the Nehrug trip. It was, I've been going to these for a while, and Lana was out there as well. But this one had a different bite to it that I've ever seen. And I think it was the commissioners around the country, whether they're Republican or Democrat, are really right now very concerned with what's coming out of D.C. on the president's comments about the Internet being regulated as a utility. We had Michael Powell, former FCC chairman under President Clinton, was there, and he was very critical of it. There's the ongoing CO2 concerns about not having enough generation built to meet the grid reliability. There's water concerns. So there was just – it was very good to go there, but I will tell you that it's got a whole different flavor right now with the intensity of the issues that are going on, and I hadn't felt that at Nehrug before. And so for me, what it kind of reaffirmed is that, you know, we're doing good things here in North Dakota, but we got to really keep an eye on what's going on around us. And so I know for me personally, I'm going to spend a lot more time inside of the Southwest Power Pool discussions and inside of the MISO discussions and inside some of these CO2 discussions in other states, because there's a definite breakout in there amongst commissioners on different viewpoints and the issues. And it's not on party lines so much. It's on how it affects their different states. So we got to keep doing good things in North Dakota, but I'll tell you that I plan on spending a lot more time in some of these issues that are happening outside North Dakota, that if we don't keep an eye on, by the time they show up in our rate cases, there's nothing we can do about them. So that would, I guess, be my reaction. And, you know, the reliability of the power grid, it continues, I think, to be a big concern of mine, and getting bigger now is some of these states are really just not building the generation they need. Georgia had they've got some nuclear plants that they're working on building right now, and that's about the only major baseload generation being built in the country right now. And so you look at some of the generation needs as they retire some of these coal plants, we got some big shortfalls out there. So, you know, in North Dakota, we're probably doing okay. We've got some challenges, but you worry about how these could affect the grid as a country, because the grid is all connected all the way through. So that's my pontification, sir. Commissioner Christman?
I have nothing to add, but again, thank you for doing that.
Sure. Commissioner Fedorchak?
I would also thank you for attending. I wasn't able to go this time around, but I agree with you that going to Nehrug is vital in our roles here in North Dakota, because we don't operate in a closet. Our work is all integrated nationally. with the electric grid and the pipeline systems and all of the energy-related activity occurring in North Dakota, it's vital that we stay involved and help use what we're learning here on the cutting edge of energy development and share that with our colleagues. I think we have a real leadership opportunity there and an obligation, and so I will be working and getting, you know, more and more involved with NARUC and other entities like that moving forward. And I think that we have a nice mix of involvement there with your service on the electric committee. I'm serving on the gas and I'm vice chair of that committee. And Randy, I believe you're on the telecom committee. And everybody's involved on the reliability issues and moving forward on involvement on EPA regulations. So I think that we've got ourselves involved in all the key areas of interest in North Dakota and nationally and are well positioned to be strong voices there.
And Commissioner Clark was there as well. He got a chance to visit with Tony a little bit. And Commissioner Colette Honorable is the outgoing NARUC chair, and she's been appointed by President Obama to be the FERC nominee. And so she's a Democrat from Arkansas, but I told her that I'd be happy to contact both our senators because Colette would do a very good job as the FERC chair. It's 3-2 depending who the president is, but the NARUC organization tends to be the people that float up to be in the FCC and tend to be on FERC. So it's good for NARUC to have these people, and I think Colette would do a good job on FERC to help out Tony.
Well, is she going to complete her term?
Her
term on NARUC, or when does she?
She's done. She was.
Oh, is it always in the fall that they're reelected?
Yep, they turn in November. So Commissioner Lisa Edgar took over as chair president of NARUC from Florida. So she's now head, and Commissioner Honorable is waiting for her FERC confirmation hearing, just like Tony was. So the second she would get confirmed, then she would leave the Arkansas Commission. So and Senator Hovind is on the committee that may confirm her. So hopefully we can help her out with that. Anything else, commissioners? Any questions from the media?
Just about NARUC, did you take any position regarding net neutrality and internet regulation?
Not yet. The president's decision came out so close to NARUC, the resolution process, you have to have the resolutions in ahead of time. But Commissioner Nelson from South Dakota is chair of the Telecom Commission. And what I sensed out of NARUC is there's no one at NARUC that supports the president's position. When you've got Michael Powell, the former FCC chair under President Clinton, saying it's not a good idea, I was very surprised. So I've contacted David Crothers from our organization here in the state in Mid-Continent, AT&T, and quite honestly asked them what their thoughts and that would be. And I haven't had a chance to talk to my colleagues yet, but I have the telecom portfolio here too. I think it would be appropriate for this commission to weigh in at some point in time on it. It's a very slippery issue, but the point that I got out of NARUC was that think of all that investment that's been done in the internet and telecom with the current set of rules. And why would we stifle that down? AT&T, the second they heard about the president's comments, they pulled a whole bunch of investment out. And so we've made great investment in the internet. We've made great investment in a lot of different things. So I guess we'll have to wait and see, Dave. But I suspect that the February NARUC, there will be resolutions that will come forward.
Go ahead. Please. No, I'm not a member of the media. I shouldn't be asking questions right now.
You can do that. You can do my job. That's fine. Anybody can do my job. Not a problem. But I was going to ask Randy, since you've got the telecom portfolio or have been on this telecom subcommittee, do you have any thoughts about net neutrality?
Well, I think Brian just said it well. This came out so close that they're – hasn't been discussion on it yet, and it is a complex issue. On the one side, it's the matter of wanting to keep the internet free and open. I think the worry on the other side is that a Netflix type puts the investment in and control, and then instead of the government controlling it, they control it. And I don't mean to pick on Netflix, but one example of the enormous user in the room that can potentially lock everything up too. And so, there's probably two different sides of the equation that can stifle what we've seen in this phenomenal growth in the internet. And so I've not been involved in discussions yet to really get a feel for where the organization wants to go.
I guess the answer is stay tuned, because this is still going to be a big discussion coming up.
Well, I think absolutely.
For some time to come, yes.
I would say, too, David, there was also, because I was involved in a little discussion, of course, about it, and there's the discussion about should you regulate this, and the next question is can you really do it? When you've got the Skypes of the world controlling a lot of the traffic, companies that are completely outside the U.S., of course, the Internet is everywhere, and so it's even if you made the decision to do it, how would you do it? It's so, and I personally, I guess I'm already kind of biased a little bit that I think, you know, both political parties have had less regulatory touch on the Internet, which has resulted in this phenomenal growth. That's kind of where I'm already predisposed right now. But I am concerned about the effects of, like Randy pointed out, you've got Netflix controlling this huge bandwidth that all of a sudden they get something where West River Telephone can't even compete with them. So that's the impact challenge right there.
I wonder if Al Gore thought of all this when he invented the Internet.
He probably did. I just thought it was stark, Dave, when you had Michael Powell, the former FCC chair, saying, and not a Republican, the same party, saying this is not the way to move forward. Did you hear his discussion, Alana, when he spoke, Commissioner Powell? So he just talked long. And he also talked about, too, about how the box that the FCC chair has put into it. It's a pending case in front of them. The president that appointed the chair of the FCC says, don't do this. And it's a pending case. So it's interesting, to say the least.
On another subject, going back to MDU and the writer, mm-hmm. Commissioner Fedorchak, how, if they want to implement this by January 1st, does that give you enough time, or might there have to be some retroactive charges if it goes past the?
That's their goal. We'll do what we can to meet that, but we'll take the time that's needed It'll be implemented, you know, when we complete the work. But I think that staff has already started evaluating this. There was a thorough review of these issues done last summer, and the revenue requirement is already established. So that's a big piece of the work right there, is establishing how much revenue and agreeing to that. And now it's just a matter of looking at what their projections are and their costs and revenue projections, and seeing if we agree with their numbers and their calculations. So I'm not sure what you mean about retroactive charges, but
allowing them to collect after the first of the year, say you came out in February with an order, can you allow them to collect back to the first of the year?
I think what we would have to look at is, would you have to have a slightly higher rate increase to cover 11 months versus 12 months, but is that correct?
I'm not saying
Mike?
That would happen. It sounds like you've got a lot of base work done already. But when you talk financials, that sometimes makes my head swim. So
yeah. Well, the other thing, if we didn't give them a higher, slightly higher charge, then they everything is trued up at the end of the year, and then they start fresh the next year for the 2016 rider. So that would be another way to address that. That's it?
Question went like this, but I noticed that I think it was on scheduling in the upcoming, you have Earth Harvest Mills looking at legal for Earth Harvest Mills. I was just kind of curious, that case has been around for a long time on the bankruptcy of Earth Harvest Mills. Admin consent.
To hire an attorney.
Where are we at in the process on that?
There was Nehruk there too, and I've been meaning to ask that question too.
Okay.
I have an answer.
Sure.
Winnipeg attorney researching liens on Canadian grain, so the final checks can go out.
Oh.
And the results are here, I think, already. So we're getting ready to go.
He's a okay.
Thanks, Dave. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. I'm going to stay around for a few things on the admin.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the CP rail complaint regarding block.
NSP reorganization.
Oh, that goes back to the restack from the rate case. So, okay, any closing comments, commissioners?
I do not.
All right. Can we reconvene at 11 o'clock for the administrative portion of our meeting? All right. We'll close this portion of the meeting. Thank you all.